This is Adam Gorightly, star of stage and screen, and I play Roger Person in the Bright Rectangle production of The Hill and the Hole, a film about high weirdness in the high desert. The Hill and the Hole is a madcap romp filled with fried dough trucks, Masonic temples gone south, and a town of tortured souls feeding themselves to the past. The film revolves around the misadventures of an archaeologist named Tom Digby, who got more than he bargained for when a simple surveying assignment turned into a dance on the dark side. The Hill and the Hole is adapted from a Fritz Lieber short story of the same name and was filmed in late July and early August during the mystical dog days in various locales in New Mexico, Colorado, and Massachusetts. It could best be described as a paranormal thriller with a little Jim Jarmusch here and some Twin Peakishness there. But with all that being said, I think the film is unique unto itself, a mix of comedy, drama, high weirdness, and horror. Influenced to a certain degree by directors Ernst and Darman's interest in Fortiana. It was a blast making the film, and while in Massachusetts, I had the chance to hook up with my old pal Tim Banal, who plays the role of my fry cook assistant, Tiny. The movie also features a cast of young and talented actors. That includes Liam Kelly, Kristen Brody, Brant Adams, Chris Dunlap, Matthew O'Donnell, Ricardo Burgos, William McLean, and a cool and creepy film score by Drew O'Doherty. Burial mounds, Masonic death cults, giant astral deities demanding blood sacrifice, fried Mars bars. What do all of these things have in common? You are about to find out.
And people can go to Vidi Space to see the movie, and they can also just Google The Hill and the Hole. You should be able to find a way to watch it. I heard it's coming to Amazon soon, but I know it's on Vidi, V-I-D-I, I believe is the website. So how do you like that? I did a little on the fly commercial.
That's what it's all about.
Let me see. Yeah, it's vidi.space is the website, so, yeah. And I'll put a little link in on shit, and I've been pushing it hard on social media, but, yeah, it was a lot of fun to do that movie, and it was cool. You haven't seen it yet, have you, Tyler?
No, I was looking for it. I was looking on Apple TV, and I couldn't find it. And I thought you said
that. Yeah, you got to go to
– I looked at
– yeah.
Okay, I'll try the actual site then, because I couldn't find it. In whatever I had on my menu there at all. I spent some time looking. So I will eventually get it.
Yeah, it's vidi.space is where people can find the movie. So, and oh yeah, it says apps on Google Play. So you can get the Vidi Space on the app. It's like the Roku thing. Anyway, back to the coronavirus. What's really troubling me a lot in the last week is that is this thing with the kids. That's really making me very concerned, because all this talk of the second wave, it's like we're seeing this other thing. I don't even know what, you know, it's not a second wave, it's a fucking shark that's coming that's coming across through the wave. A lot of kids, for people who aren't aware or are listening to this down the line, a lot of kids are getting sick with essentially what they call Kawasaki disease, right?
Yes, it looks like it. It's not Kawasaki's disease, but it has some of the same manifestations.
Oh, okay.
And that's the vascular bed attack we talked about, the rash, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can be pretty bad, and I kind of like – My blood pressure went up this week because they asked the president about it, and he said, well, it's only a few cases. It's not a big deal. It's only a few cases. And I just about fell off my couch, and I did yell at the TV, "That's what you said the last time!" Like, it was like fucking deja vu. I was like, dude, he literally was like, "It's only a few cases. It's nothing to worry about. It's just a few cases, and they'll be gone soon."
Yeah.
Like, no, dude, don't. You said that the last time, you fucking dick. Don't do this to us. So I hope that he's right about that, because it's there's all this talk. You know, it's funny. We talk about, should we open up again? Should we close? Do we stay on lockdown? The next big debate, and we're seeing it percolating now, and probably when Tyler and I come back to talk later on in the summer after next week's show, it'll be really broiling. Is the school debate? And you know, you were
yes.
you're a college teacher, so you would definitely be able to speak to all this. But we're seeing it now in a lot of ways, because I think that people have learned, organizations have learned, that you have to look like 6 weeks to 2 months ahead. And 2 months from now, people are going to really be starting, especially colleges, are going to be starting to get back to school. So I know California has already canceled the fall semester at all their state schools. And we may see that cascade across the country.
I think what they did is the Cal State system is announcing that they're going to go distance learning. And I haven't heard anything about the University of California system itself. They're gigantic systems. But I think one of them Cal State has already said we're going to do a distance learning format. And I don't know what that means in terms of residence for students, but I think it is literally going to mean the students stay home and don't congregate on campus. But that's going to be difficult. You know, the thing about getting back to the Kawasaki-like syndrome in children,
right.
What this really should remind us of is, first of all, what you're going to see now is more cases discovered. And the reason is because there will be a higher index of suspicion that, these kids are there is a thread, a common thread, and as people begin to note and are aware, they begin to see it. It's one of those things that sometimes there's a lot of stuff right before your eyes that you don't quite connect, and then somebody makes the connection, and suddenly we realize, like, oh, my God, we're swimming in these cases. Lyme disease. Lyme disease came to light in the U.S. not because the clinicians had put together the clues. It was a woman who lived in Old Lyme, Connecticut, who called the public health authorities and said, hey, what are you doing with all these kids that have juvenile arthritis? Isn't that odd? And they recognized that she was right. There's a cluster of what the heck. And then they slowly, but she was the impetus. She changed history by that. So anyway, we'll see more. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is it reminds us that this particular agent may not cause overt disease. Unfortunately, it does cause severe disease in some children, but it's circulating through those kids. And when they begin to exchange this, they're not locked in a box overnight. They go home to their families, their parents, their grandparents, and they could end up being vehicles of infection, at least at some rate. One of the ways to break an influenza epidemic is to actually close down preschools and schools and stop the circulation in kids who have never been infected with influenza, tamp it down by keeping them home for a while. And I think in Taiwan and Hong Kong, they've been pretty successful at breaking the back of transmission by just that particular measure. So I think you're right. We're going to have a big battle. And it's not something that you necessarily want to do because you say, oh, it's low risk. Yes, and at the same time, no. And this is the maddening part of medicine, is that you can have two fundamentally different answers that are both correct at the same time. Yeah, you may not hurt a lot of kids, but you're not getting away free here. It's gonna cause you pain.
Yeah, for all you know, all these kids in America could have been the ones who spread it all before all these people got sick. So. Who knows? They were all hanging around schools and shit.
It's possible.
Well, that's you're going to see that, I think. And I think with this, coupled with the Kawasaki issue, it's only going to heighten this debate. Because now, before it was like, well, kids are okay relatively, it seems, for the most part. So schools should be one of the things we can really consider opening again. But now it's like, well, if little kids are getting sick with some weird offshoot of this disease, now people are going to be like, well, slow down now. Let's not open the schools, because it turns out they do get some – it affects them in some other way. As I said before, the indecipherable nature of this disease is maddening.
It really
who
is,
knew?
And it's dangerous.
When we started this back in March, who knew we'd be talking about Kawasaki disease coming up in kids as a result of all this? It's like, what the fuck, man?
Probably a lot of pediatricians would have said, you know, the only measure of an epidemic is not the death rate. And so we actually, the medical people will talk about morbidity and mortality. And so, yeah, the mortality numbers at first were good in that relatively few children under 18 seemed to die. But now you recognize that there's a morbidity aspect to this problem as well. And it is not inconsequential, and we'll have to deal with it. I'll tell you where they're really going to hit the wall, in my opinion, is in places where they have a strong teachers union, say New York, for example. And one of the questions will be, hey, if I'm over 60 and I'm still working and I get sick, then can I have, you know, the full medical benefit? Will you help me? Could I have insurance or whatnot? And I think the unions may be able to extract some sort of protections for people who are working under risk or whatnot. Like the hero pay for people who were working at some chains, you know, with food delivery. And so it's just not even begun yet. I think you're right. We're just about to begin that, and it will be a fascinating battle. Fascinating.
Yeah, we're going to see it really heat up in the next few weeks and months. We got somebody on the line. Let's bring them on. They're on a Skype thing, so we don't know who they are. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing, my friends? This is Mike. How are you today?
I'm well, Mike. How are you? Where are you calling from?
From Asia.
Where in Asia?
Singapore.
Singapore.
You're calling from Singapore. Wow.
Yes.
What can you tell us about the situation in Singapore, Mike?
Yeah, situation in Singapore, you know, first we came, you know, to, we did pretty good. And later we put our guards down.
Mike? Tyler, are you there?
Oh, I think he moved. Yeah, I think he moved his microphone. I can just barely hear him.
Mike, we can't hear you, dude.
Okay, hold on. Hold on 1 second.
There we go.
All right.
Can you hear me good now?
Yes.
I can hear you well.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, because of sometimes it's long distance, it takes a little bit of time.
No worries. Thank you for laughing at that, Tyler.
You know, we put our guards down. We were doing good. But then, you know, as a result, we became, you know, infected again more people. So right now we have 19,622 cases, 1,106 stable hospitalized, critical 18. And in isolation is almost 18,500, and discharged completely 7,300, and total death so far 21. So still we are doing much better than any other places. But go ahead.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Are you under like a lockdown?
Yes, of course. But the question is, we don't have about putting mask on. We don't have any problem putting gloves on. We don't divide the country like that, because we are all saying, live here, whether as a immigrant or you know, many Americans live here like me, myself. But the question is, again, you know, we don't divide the country. I mean, I know in the United States people are kind of divided, and people even put a mask before entrance to the grocery, but in the grocery shop they take it off. So
right,
what
right.
do that good to your fellow citizens? As long as we are not in the same page, we are going to have division, we have misery, we are going to have more destruction of this virus
yeah.
keep continue. I mean, right now, I mean, in United States, they have over 1.5 million people infected, and according to the stats, it says, what, 90,000 people died, and probably more, which they haven't
yeah.
accounted for. But why? Why we have to be this? Why we have to be this angry? We know this is a virus. We know they are
yeah.
not going to make a vaccine for this for 5 years or 4 years from now. So we have to be careful. We have to be, you know, work together. We are in it all together. We have an app in Singapore. We download it. It says we are in it together. And in, the only information they can get very limited one. And suppose we are going to store a comeback. If somebody is infected, they send us something. They said you came in contact with an infected person. So, you know, but we don't take it. It's optional, but we do it because we want to make sure, you know, if we came to contact with somebody or not.
Yeah, you want to know.
I mean, it's a
yeah,
peace
yeah.
of mind. And the
exactly,
same app
yeah,
is coming
yeah.
to, yeah, same app is coming to America very soon too. But you guys make a big deal out of it, but we don't
yes.
make big out of it. Go ahead, sir.
Right, right. That's exactly what's going to happen. There'll be people who won't opt in on the app because they're afraid of their privacy being stolen. They're more concerned about their privacy and everything in Big Brother than they are with the virus. So it's you know, we'll see. We'll just see how it plays out, I guess, right?
Well, you know, I guess the other thing is the idea of civic responsibility, and that if you have a feeling that you should, we're all in this together, masks are not necessarily going to protect you as much as they might help you not forward transmitting the infection. And
right.
all of that helps break the chain, you know, and there are, I think Steve Ray sent something today. Some people can't wear masks. They're medically not able to. But for most of us, we can, and I think it'd probably be a good thing to maybe do that. We just see things so individualistically here as opposed to the greater benefit maybe view that is more natural in Singapore. I'm sorry
yeah.
to say that.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that's kind of the case with a lot of Asian countries. A lot of them, a lot of those countries, the people there, masks are – people were wearing masks for a while before all this ever happened, right? I mean, that was kind of like
yeah.
You know, I don't know what they were concerned about, but I think they probably had to deal with
worse
public health issues, I guess,
China.
Than we did. What's
yeah,
that?
Pollution from China, pollution from Malaysia and other countries. India was also – we don't really have a – be compliant. I mean, you know, it's for your safety. And yet, vaccine really is, according to Donald Trump, that he said he's going to mobilize all his army and to give us vaccine, for example, by end of this year. And he said he's going to open up everything in United States of America. And so the thing is, first of all, what coronavirus COVID-19 has been mutated many, many times. Scientists they found out 40 times. It was 2 months ago, and by now probably is 800 times it's mutated. But something that is mutating, how can you find the vaccine for it? That's my question from your panel, number one. And yet, what is it that you want to give antibodies? What kind of antibodies is that you want to give to the 300 million people? And so basically Donald Trump, he is also globalist, and he lied and he keeps lying, and people don't recognize it. Go ahead, sir.
Tyler?
You mean what kind of antibodies would we try to induce in people to make them immune? I think what they're going to look for is the receptor. We do understand what the receptor is, and then there's a core part of that receptor that's basically known as RBD, receptor binding domain, that is pretty critical for the function of the virus. It can't change much. And so we'll probably try to use that as the prime target to make antibodies. The question then becomes, is that going to actually work in terms of neutralization against the intact virus? And that's where we have to do the tests, the plaque reduction, neutralization titers. But we have to kind of – that's a good starting point. The problem that people worry about is if this particular virus is analogous to other, like, common cold viruses, and coronaviruses are part of those, that sometimes our immunity is really solid for a few years, and then it begins to wane. And that's because maybe the viruses are changing a little bit, or we need to, in medical terms, a lot of times we apply a booster to remind people, keep these antibodies up. We may need to boost, but we're on such new territory here that all these things remain to be discovered. And so this is one of the worries about how effective will we be, how long will it be effective, and it could possibly turn out that we will need to boost people every few years for a while until maybe we can get the levels down to a point where it's relatively rare. But there's a possibility that this virus is going to be with us at a low level for a long period of time, and we'll have to cope, as Tim was saying. So there are so many unknowns. There are logical targets. There are great places to hit, and we know we can hit them. But ramifications, does that mean complete immunity, or how good of immunity, how effective? Those will only be discovered when we get there, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. Mike, did you have a first question? I thought I missed your first question there. What was the, aside from the antibodies, what were you at?
Right. My second question was, he answered, he says it takes 5 years minimum to develop a vaccine or some other form of treatment for it. But, so this is with us for a long time. So why should we divide and try to create more chaos in, for example, North America? Because right now, those people who are coming and mass demonstrate and bringing their guns is not only a threat to the country, national security of the country, and et cetera. This is not the way you deal with it. You want to have a right to demonstrate that, go ahead, demonstrate. But at least we have a mask. At least have here in Asia, we have 12 feet away from each other, actually, in Asia, not 6 feet. But the question is, they cause more havoc in the system. So basically, people who have to have surgeries, now they cannot have surgeries because all the hospitals are with COVID patients, and it still is rising. We see that, for example, South Dakota is rising 123% rate now, and many other places that they were low, now they're getting high. So,
yes.
I mean, it's something we must work together and come to the agreement, and we are in it all together. We have to have compassion and peace, love, unity. Otherwise, we are going to infect. Infection goes to infection, infection going, and 80% of the population in the United States will get the coronavirus by election. What do you think of that, sir?
Oh, please, no.
Well, I hope not.
I hope
so. We'll see.
That's one of the worries that we have. If we're unbelievably lucky, and maybe there are a lot more asymptomatic cases than we realize, and there's more immunity in the general population, but my fear would be that we're probably 5 to 10% of the population immune overall. It may be higher. I think we mentioned in New York, you know, like 10 to 20 times more cases are actual infections as opposed to the hospital cases at one point. That's my personal estimate. I can't say that that's the number. But, the fear that I have is that it does get out of control, and we could find out what this thing can really do, and we don't want to know. I mean, we already have.
Yeah.
We're going to hit 100,000 by June, I think, easily. I think we mentioned that last week.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to
be there. We'll be there, like, by Memorial Day, probably.
I think so, Tim, and I think we're going to blow right past the original predictions where they're saying if everything goes right, I don't know if you remember the models, if everything goes right, we'll have 100,000, maybe 150. We could lose that goal very quickly, and in fact, I think we already have. But God help us if it's 80% of the population hit by the election day.
That would be pretty bad.
Do you know, sir, why? Because one person who is infected can infect 400 people in a month. Each one of them can infect another 400. You may have symptoms or you may not have symptoms there. And that's why, based on those calculations, based on the things that we have seen in North America, especially that people are not following the code of conduct or listen to their authority. That is causing 1,000 more harms than to listening to the authorities, unfortunately.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely. Well, we're it may not seem this way, Mike, but we're in this together, me and Tyler and you, brother. So be safe out there in Singapore. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, sir. Bye bye.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Be careful. Be careful.
That was very enlightening caller. I was mildly concerned that Mike was going to prank us. I'm still not used to callers.
That was good. He's definitely following the news very carefully, and that includes here in the United States, even though he's all the way in Singapore. You are global, man.
I know, dude. This is a very international episode. Well, we got one more caller on the line here. That's partially why I kind of gave Mike the bum's rush, because I don't know who this person is either, but I want to make sure we get them on the show. So let's get this caller on. They've been on hold for a while. They're also a Skype number, so hopefully they recognize that they're on the air now. Caller, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Hi, I'm Stuart. I'm one of the guys from the chat, the SL1605 guy, the guy from the UK.
Do you like to make drawings?
do I like to make drawings?
Yeah, you know, like the skit? Do you know that skit? I know.
No,
Stuart, what's going on, man? He was in the chat, folks. Stuart is a longtime listener, and he said I'm like the dude, like the Big Lebowski of the paranormal, which is becoming more and more true by the day. But
I'm glad you. Well, yeah, I meant that as a compliment because you seem so sort of just like laid back all the time, and it's nice, and yeah, it's nice that you're around, like doing these again, because it's sort of something familiar from before coronavirus happened. So that's good. I find that quite comforting.
Yeah. How about that, Tim?
See that, Tyler?
Where are you located? Where are you located exactly in the UK?
I'm just north of London in this town, in a town called St. Albans.
Okay, I think I've been through there.
Oh yeah, it's a nice place. Yeah, it's got a cathedral and everything. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's nice. Not that I've been in there for a while though, obviously. So Yeah, but yeah, that was good. I mean, yeah, I was on the chat and like, I just phoned because I was, you know, trying to explain what it's like in the UK, but I thought it'd be better if I just spoke about it and stuff. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's what I want to know. I owe you an apology because it was Simon from the skit, not Stuart. So I don't expect you to. I fucked the joke up.
See?
I am
yeah,
an ass.
But
I apologize, Stuart. So.
Yeah, no.
So
well,
now,
when I was a baby, I used to be homicidal and want to take over the world. That for Stuart.
There you go. So what's the situation in England now? I guess start with the now. I think you were saying that you've been in the lockdown now for like 6 weeks or so, and people are getting stir crazy, and they can't keep the cops can't even really keep up with the people who are breaking out and shit.
Yeah, it's like people are gradually coming out more. So I think the Prime Minister he sort of tried to like acknowledge that by saying people can go out more than 1 hour a day now. They can go out more than once and for longer than an hour. But I think he said that. I think the people coming out happened before he said that. I think people are just sort of going to parks more and. And going for walks more and sort of going to these like national parks more and just having picnics and stuff. And the police are, and that sort of thing, police are trying to find, well, the police are giving out fines, but more and more people are just doing it. And it's sort of becoming a bit sort of unsustainable. And then Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, said that people can go back to work on Wednesday. And so now public transport is getting very crowded and it seems like, there's a lot of poor people who are now being given have to have the choice, which is a horrible choice, of either going to work and possibly getting this coronavirus, or staying at home and starving basically. So that's like horrible. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. And then he said that schools are opening on the 1st of June for the youngest children. I don't know how you'd say it in America. It's like reception for us, like the 4 to 5 year olds. Is that K?
Yeah, like kindergarten. Yeah.
So it's like kindergarten, the year above that, and then the year, the oldest year before you go to secondary school. So that's like the 10 to 11 year olds, just so they can have some preparation time for that. But
yeah. Okay.
He did it with the sort of way that someone dumped someone by changing their relationship status on Facebook because none of the teachers had heard of this either. It's like the first time they've heard of it. And like now the unions and the doctors are all up in arms saying like, no one knows how we're going to make this work. No one knows how we're going to get a bunch of kids in school. I mean, like some teachers are over like in their 60s, so they're not going to want to come back. Some children, I mean, my son's going to be one of these children, but he's got a classmate and who's got a sister with cancer, so that guy's not going to come back because
yeah, oh boy,
yeah.
Stuff. And then some parents are like, well, I don't want to send it. It's like, I mean, everyone seems to be flying by the seat of their pants, which is, I mean, you can't blame them for doing that because I mean, it's happening at the same speed. But I think a lot of politicians are really. They're getting itchy to open up the economy. It's like that. From my point of view, people seem to be talking about the economy more than they should be in this situation. I know people need to eat, but it's like, you know, it seems a lot of the economy, now that we're doing this, a lot of the economy is sort of based around stuff that people don't really need. I mean, a lot of people have gone down to the essentials, like you need food, you need shelter. So, you know, you need to make sure people have that, in my humble opinion, rather than trying to open up. I'm not going to name anything. I'm not saying that anything's like worse than one thing, but it's like.
Right.
Yeah,
I know. I understand your perspective. Yeah. Yeah. No one's. Yeah. It's hard. No one wants people to think you're playing God or anything like that. So it's like one person's job is I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. It's very. It's very difficult. It's very difficult, you know, to I empathize with the people who want to get out and work. I don't know if you've been listening to the show for a while, but, you know, I totally empathize with them. But we've been stressing on the show, too, and like Jim Vujovic pointed out with Florida, it's a psychological thing as much as it is a bureaucratic thing. So the idea that just that people won't come to the restaurants because the restaurants won't open is a fallacy. It seems like it's turning out because the restaurants are opening and people aren't coming. So clearly the issue isn't necessarily whether or not we should open the restaurants. The issue is people need to feel like they can go to the restaurant without getting sick.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. But unfortunately, it's like, I mean, this coronavirus isn't going to go away, and I mean, I feel really bad for people in restaurants and like the travel industry and like there is, and yeah, because it looks like it's going to be around for a while, and yeah, like even if they do open, people aren't going to them. So it'll be easy. It's easy for me to come up with solutions. I think the government should give people free money, but I'm not an economist, and that'll probably ruin everything in the long run. But I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's a trade-off. I'm in the free money camp too. Anyone who isn't in the free money camp is crazy. But yeah, I think it would be. If they kind of, I feel like, I'm sure they have, I don't know, but I feel like if they sort of sat down and did the math and everything, it probably would just make more sense to give people, like they gave everybody here like about $1,200, give or take, for the most part. And they're talking about giving more, but I think it's going to have to be something like that because that at least can help people and shit. And it would probably be more cost efficient to give everybody like another $2,000 or something than to pay for all the medical expenses and everything that's going to cost for the people that might get sick. Like, that's what I mean. I'm sure they tried to do the math on this, or somebody's doing the math, or somebody should do the math to try and figure that out, because it might be just more beneficial just to give everybody that money rather than businesses going under, and then you got more, then you're just putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, in a sense. So,
yeah, exactly.
People could keep their businesses open if they got. There's a lot of problems. I'm sure, do they have like a stimulus package in England, like they have here and in Canada? Like, did they bail out these small businesses yet?
Yeah. Well, I kind of have a small business. I'm a tutor. I'm a science tutor, and I lost a load of business because exams got cancelled. So I'm getting a bit. I mean, I've moved all my tutoring online as well. So I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I've still got a bit of business, and I'm still going to get this check and whatever. But mine's not coming till June. I'm not sure about the people. I mean, people have been furloughed they've been put off work, but they're gonna get 80% of their wage. And it was just for March, April, May, but now it's been extended up till October.
I know.
I wish you guys could have the same. I mean, what? Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to look on sort of positives from this, and like maybe we'll get in the habit of just giving people free money that after the coronavirus is like being contained, and that people have got the vaccine, or that we've got life. Then basically, it might just hopefully it might become the norm, and then you know people won't have to worry about starving at all. At least, because at least everyone will have access to some kind of income. But yeah, I mean that's a long way off. I mean that's another thing that people. I think at the beginning, a lot of politicians were like, oh, well, you know, we've just got to do this for a few months. And they're going to keep saying that just because I think I think it might happen until the vaccine's found in 18 months. But I think if any politician said, oh, we're going to have to do this for 18 months, then everyone will be up in arms. So they've got to keep on saying, oh, it's got to be another few weeks and another few weeks. But there we go. Yeah.
Yeah. You could be on to something there.
Yeah. Well, it's, it's rough. Now, if I wanted to come over to England, we were talking about me going to Ireland. I assume it's the same as England. You guys got that, like, people aren't allowed to come and visit, right?
I laughed because I think you're saying that Ireland's exactly the same thing. No, I don't think anyone's allowed to visit. So, or maybe they're just saying you've got to have a 2-week quarantine or something. But they're trying to open up the airports as well, because that's been really hit hard. So, I think you're gonna have to have a 2-week quarantine at some point. I don't think it's quite.
Yeah, who has
yet.
Time for that? Then if you want to go for like 10 days, you got to block out almost a month.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Who has, unless you're retired and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to put people off, isn't it? Yeah, so the airlines are not like, that's not going to work. That's just, yeah, it's unsustainable for the airlines as well. So, yeah, I feel sorry for anyone who works for an airline because, I mean, that's completely, the industry's gone, yeah, that industry's gone down. Like, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I,
it's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, the people
it's pretty rough.
Do it. Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm trying to take positives from this. Like, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, it's given me a chance to look at, you know, what's really important in life and cut out stuff that you know, is just unnecessarily maybe dragging me down or something, you know. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, we talked about that sort of in the beginning of all this, that it should offer us, that we should take some time and sort of get some perspective on the possible benefits of this, you know, the silver lining to a very dark cloud. I mean, this, believe me, nobody won't. We would all love to go back in time and not have this happen. But since it happened, it's like, all right, well, let's look at some of the things that have come about since this happened. It makes one wonder. We never talked about this on the show. If when we get out of this mess, if there'll be a renewed. If the whole climate change thing will take on a different hue, if people will be like, look, we slept on that climate, we've been sleeping on this climate thing, that's probably the next thing that's going to fuck us all up, so let's get on that. Or if people are going to be like, I'm just done with, like, we just beat the coronavirus, let's celebrate for a while before we, you know, and it gets pushed off, kind of like when there's like a mass shooting here in America, and they go, now is not the time to talk about guns, and it's like, but when, this is the right time to talk about guns. Someone just shot a bunch of people, so maybe that'll be the attitude about climate change after we get out of this. People will say, now is not the time to talk about climate change. We just got out of this coronavirus panic, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with all that. Because up until, yeah, it was really. It still is an incredibly important issue, but nobody cares about it right now because we want to. No one can worry about what's going to happen in like 20 or 30 years or even 10 or 15 years because we need to make it like to the end of this year. We need to make sure we get through this year.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's the bad thing about climate change because, like, you know, well, because I teach science. I mean, you know, people. It was in the 60s when Keeling and the scientists went to Hawaii and found out that the carbon dioxide levels were rising. And then, so, I mean, technically we knew about climate change in the 60s and then it's just been dragging on. But I think they're interlinked in a lot of ways, like people's electricity usage has gone down. And like, I've been reading articles saying like people are just using this as an opportunity to just transfer to renewables, like old governments are. And like in the UK, we've used more renewables than ever. And like, well, even the coal plants are sort of getting, they're asking for bailouts now. So, I mean, it might be possibly an easy time for that. And also, you know, some people are saying that the reason this virus turned up was that people were sort of maybe exploring all these sort of, I don't know, like natural areas that maybe we should just leave alone. And it was just hiding around in some animals there. And then if people go around, you know, maybe it'll encourage people to not burn down the rainforest. Because, you know, if you burn down the rainforest, you might catch another horrible disease that shuts the world down for years. So I think there's some interlinked bits with the coronavirus and climate change. So I hope, it'll all sort
That's
of...
That's possible. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah. I thought about that, yeah, in a sense, too. Even on a karmic level. Like, I think that was kind of a joke when all this happened, where it's like, this is the planet's way of stopping us from killing it. So,
yeah.
On a very sort of, yeah, like a Zen karmic level, one wonders if it is some sort of, and also, you know, there's probably could be some kind of scientific thread to that as well. It'll be interesting. Go ahead, Tyler.
We need to come back and think about sustainability. And one of the things is how much of the natural world we're destroying, but also how are we going about producing food? And how are we exploiting, ecosystems to get what we feel we need in terms of meat and fiber and other products, those things can come back to haunt us in a big hurry. We've had big worries about influenza with good reason, and a large part of that is how we handle our herd and flock animals.
I teach a course on climate change to kids online, and when I was researching it, it seems that basically rearing animals is probably a really horrible thing for the environment, basically, in many ways.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
I mean, I've said this to a few people. Some people like their meat too much, so maybe our savior will be the Impossible Burger, where people can taste meat, but, you know, get it from plants. I mean, just the fact that a lot of cows get fed grain that you could just feed to people sort of reduces the amount of people you can feed. You can just feed people in terms of calories. If you just fed people the plants, then you could feed like 10 times more people than instead of feeding the plants to the cows. And then, I mean, that doesn't apply to grass-fed cows because we can't eat grass, but a lot of animals get fed stuff that humans could eat if we want. I think, yeah. I mean, I'd go vegetarian if I was better at cooking, but I'm terrible at it. I went vegetarian for a few years and I was just terrible at doing it, and I was obviously low on protein, but that's what I got to say about that.
Interesting.
I mean, it's sort of interlinked and stuff. So that's my two cents. I thought it'd be great to phone in. I mean, I started listening like 12 years ago. Yeah, that's great.
Well, thanks for tuning in, man. Thanks for calling in. Now you're part of an All America canon. So
I know,
much appreciated.
I better go. It's like 3 a.m. here. I just couldn't sleep, and decided to tune in live.
Well, thanks for calling in, man. Much appreciated.
Yeah, brilliant. My pleasure. So have a good one, guys. Thanks so much for your lovely shows, Tim and Tyler. So
Well, glad you could call in. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah,
great.
Be safe out there. Good night.
Be careful.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye. How about
that? There you go.
Tim?
Look at that. What a great show for callers tonight.
So here's a person who's got the dilemma that involves his own child and the schools and everything. It's coming right up. There are big decisions people are going to be forced to make.
Yeah, because like we said at the start of tonight's show, this is just a thing now. This is the now normal that we have this shitty ass virus to contend with day after day. Again, it was, when this all started, it was like, well, I don't know. It was just the idea when everything shut down, it was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, this can't last forever. Now, you know, we're trying to get out of that situation, but it's much easier to to stop everything than it is to start it back up again, as we're finding.
It really is. I mean, that if that wasn't clear before, it is now. Honestly, one of the hopes was that if we just stop for 2 weeks, we will break the chain of transmission, that we would have the virus basically subdued, and we'd have a chance to then contact trace and stop the infections. And obviously that didn't come to pass. And it's not just us. If you look at, Great Britain, proportionally, how many have they had? How many deaths? 60,000 plus? You know, they're hit.
I'll look while you're talking, Ben.
They've been hit as hard or worse than the U.S. on a per-person basis.
They've had 35,000, essentially.
35,000. Okay, so I'm way off base there. But
they're actually second behind America, so you're not necessarily barking up the wrong tree.
The two of us are going to lead the world here very quickly, unless Brazil has a major meltdown.
Well, that brings up an interesting point that circles back to an episode we did way back at the beginning of this crisis where we were talking about Russia and how they had, like, nobody. Well, now, as of this week, Russia is the number two country in the world behind America for cases. They have 262,000. So we talked – I'd like to dig that up, that number from that episode. We talked in just a testament to the insanity of this entire situation. But we talked about it, I think, the third or fourth week on the show. And it was like, geez, Tyler, there's only like 850 people in Russia that have it. And now here we are, May 15th, and Russia has 262,000 cases. So all of our bluster or musings or speculation about, like, oh, why is it that they have no – well, it turns out that either they weren't reporting it or just exploded. And now look at where they are. They're in pretty bad shape.
Yeah, I think we were puzzling over how could that be, and I said, well, maybe it's because it's the wintertime and the tourist travel is way down. You know, like Leningrad, for example, that's such an enormously popular place in the summer. St. Petersburg. I can't learn anything new. I'm too old. And so we thought, well, maybe that's it. The travel is down because of the weather. And sure enough, look at that. It got in and got going. The other thing to keep in mind with those numbers, the last ones I saw, is that their fatality rates were proportionally way too low. And so maybe, you know, they're reporting them slowly, or again, there's another problem. But I think we're about to, with 200,000 cases plus.
Their deaths are 2,400, so they're at about 1%.
More reasonable then. The first numbers I saw, everybody's going like, that's too low.
Yeah, they have 262,000 confirmed cases and 2,400 deaths, so about approximately 1%.
And am I correct that most of those are in Moscow, in that area?
I don't know if I have that kind of data in front of me. I do not.
Okay.
So.
Because I thought they were the heavily afflicted ones, but St. Petersburg will get hit once the tourists start coming back, you know, because that is such an enormously popular place to visit.
And
phenomenally interesting, by the way, if you ever get the chance.
I doubt I'll ever get the chance at this point now.
Oh, you'll get the chance. You're a young guy. It'll come back. And these places are just so full.
There are places I want to go, Tyler. I want to go to Australia. So
I agree. I'm right there with you. But
have you been?
Get a chance to go to Ireland? No, I haven't. I haven't been any further in that direction than Hawaii, actually.
Oh, wow.
So, I've got to do all the Asia. I still have, that's all hasn't been done by me. But these places are just so rich in history. Ireland, England, United Kingdom, Scotland. There is so much.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, Europe is just fascinating. Like I said, I went to St. Petersburg, and the history there is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. You got to do it.
St. Petersburg, Russia?
Yes.
Sounds terrifying, though. I don't know. I got to wait till things are a little cooler between us and Russia.
You know what, Tim? It was absolutely fine when we traveled there. You have to get a visa. You have to pay to get a visa. I think I'm good for 5 years or 10 years. But I was wondering the same thing, because as soon as you open your mouth, they know you're an American or a Canadian. But when we were there, we were treated just absolutely spectacularly well by everybody, people on the street, everywhere. A lot of people speak really good English, and St. Petersburg in particular is really attuned to tourism. And so, and the lingua franca there is either Russian or English. Just about everybody has a little bit of command of English, so you can get around very easily. The people were very agreeable. I mean, it was just a great time. Seriously, don't pass it up for that reason.
We'll see. It's not high on my list, but
and Ireland
we'll
is fun. The Irish are a lot of fun. So you've got a great time ahead of you there if that's going to be your first trip over.
Yeah, that'll be my first time in Ireland. I lived in London for a while, so.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I'm somewhat familiar with the culture of London, so, or the English culture in a sense. I could get around London, like if you drop me there tomorrow, I could probably get around pretty well within like a few hours of getting my bearings. But yeah, it was fun. That was a long time ago, 20 years ago. Jesus.
Well, can you? Are you allowed to donate blood if you wish? Or did you get in there?
Yeah, no, I believe. Yeah, I don't have any reason why I wouldn't. Yeah, no, I'm good to donate.
Well,
blood.
what they do is I forget what the actual dates are, but if you lived in the UK from say 80 to 1990, you're off the donation list because of fear of the mad cow prions, basically the BSE that maybe leaked into humans. So. Anyway,
I don't like giving away any. If I had the antibodies, I would make an exception. If I had coronavirus antibodies, I'd make an exception. But otherwise, I don't give away any of my body parts. So, blood, including blood.
Okay. Once again, so, that's the spirit, Tim. You're showing the way.
Well, I just, I just feel like. I just feel like when they put that thing on your license, it's like, oh, you're organ donor. It's like, I just feel like they, I feel like you get substandard service in an emergency. I feel like they're like, well, it's all right, Doc. Don't feel bad. He's an organ donor, so other people will benefit from the fact that you didn't get to help him until you finished your lunch break or whatever. So.
Yeah, and we could use that liver. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or he's like, my stepson needs a kidney, so let's just look the other way on this guy that came in. So, yeah, I'm taking all my shit with me. We got like 60 seconds, but I'll bring this up. The late, great Tracy Twyman had an amazing story. I tell this story to people all the time about her father who he – argued for this idea that you should be able to essentially like a reverse mortgage on your organs.
Huh.
So you could pre-sell your organs and get some kind of payoff from, I don't know, the pharmaceutical industry or something. So I thought that was a really clever and interesting and sort of like creepy also, but futuristic idea where it's like, well, you have a supply of shit that's in high demand, so you should be able to pre-sell it ahead of time, where it's like, all right, well, when I die, this medical company can, they own all my shit, all my kidneys and liver and eyeballs and all that. So.
Okay. That's a new one on me. I hadn't heard that before.
I know. I'd never heard it either. It blew my mind, though, when I heard it. I'm like, This idea needs more attention. I like it. All right. Well, we've lost the live audience, but I want to thank. Let's see if I can do this right. Mike and Stuart, who called in on the show from Singapore and England, respectively, pretty amazing. Jim Vujovic and Zach Copley in the chat room down in Florida and in San Francisco from coast to coast, and Sasquara all the way down in Australia. So an amazing lineup of live listeners. I'm sure there were others who were listening live but didn't join in the participation aspect of the show. And we appreciate them listening anyway. And, of course, all the folks listening on the MP3 down the line later on. So, yeah, great show tonight. And next week we'll wrap it up for a little while. And we'll see where things go from there.
Sounds good to me.
All right, brother. Well, on that note, thanks to everybody for listening. Thank you again, Tyler. We'll be back next week. Until then, be safe out there, everybody.